Hello, what is up, and welcome to Off the Books, where we're surfing the uncharted waters of accounting, of finance, and wherever else those waves take us. Off the Books is brought to you by Workiva, SEC reporting, internal audit management, SOX compliance, and much, much more, all made stupid simple, automated, and collaborative. I'm Drew Dubner, and I'm your host. I am not an accountant, but I like asking questions of people who are, so finance professionals can do their jobs better. And today, we got a real good one. We got Dana Williams and Brooke Upton. Hey, Dana, would you tell the fine folks at home who you are?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Dana Williams. I am a product marketer at Workiva. Excited to be on the podcast today. I did start my career in the SOX PMO and in different accounting and finance roles, but I am passionate about technology and finding ways to use technology to be more efficient, and excited to talk today.
Radical. Cool. How about you, Brooke?
Hi, everybody. Happy to be here as well. I have over 20 years of experience in governance, risk, and compliance and risk management. I am also on the product marketing team at Workiva. I have a background in product marketing. That's been the majority of my career. A small stint in a financial accounting firm, but the majority of my career has been in product marketing.
Excellent. And thanks for jumping aboard. So, you know, summer is winding down. There's a starting to become a chill in the air. You know, the Northern Hemisphere is cooling down a little bit, and the smell of mediocre coffee and cookies is in the air. Yes, yes, indeed. It is conference season once more. This year is obviously a little different with COVID and all. That's stating the obvious, but, you know, there's opportunities there. We can shelve that stuffy, drab interview suit and attend conferences the way they were meant to be experienced, in sweatpants, in your high school gym class t-shirt, and bunny slippers. So just recently, the IIA, the voice of the internal audit function we all hold dearly, held their GRC conference online. So all three of us went, we all took meticulous notes, and we are here to drop all those deets for you, dear listener. But unfortunately, we have none of those CPE credits. Sorry. Let's just jump right in. All three of us went to IIA GRC, and we took some pretty good notes here. And, you know, start from the top. Let's talk about the opening keynote. This was done by a guy named Caspar Berry, who was a trifecta of fantastic things. He was a child actor meets professional poker player meets inspirational speaker. And he talked quite a bit about uncertainty and risk. Him being a professional poker player, you know, there's a lot of risk in gambling. That's kind of innate. And he brought that into light in terms of some of the uncertain events that are going on in the world. COVID, obviously, Brexit, some of the tumultuous stuff that's going on with our government. And all this uncertainty means complexity, and complexity means risk, and risk means we're at an IIA conference.
Right, Drew. And all of these random things, the only thing we can do is to really take calculated risk. And one of the things I found really interesting is that he mentioned that Babe Ruth, while he has the record for home runs, he also had the record for strikeouts. So it wasn't necessarily a method of, you know, he learned from his mistakes, but it was the amount of times that he tried.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's what I took away from the whole thing too. Like, you have to be willing to make calculated risks in order to succeed in where you're going. And that seems very silly and very table stakes, but put into the context of internal audit, the risks are natural and risks are important to take. And I like that analogy that he gave with Babe Ruth as well.
I also interpreted it like there's a lot of talk right now on being agile. And I think it's important to know that when you make those changes on the fly, you don't have to have a perfect outcome. A lot of it is taking that risk that you are going to find a better way of doing it or shifting things around. But, you know, that doesn't have to stop you from taking those risks or making changes.
For sure. And there's a million different sports-isms to throw in there. The old Wayne Gretzky, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. It's the same sort of concept. It's just about how to make calculated risks.
One other interesting fact that he mentioned was that Google allows their developers to basically have one day a week to create what they want. And then the rest of the week, they basically perform their normal developer job functions. So this allows for creativity, for the opportunity to come up with new ideas, but they may fail at creating a new project. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, dedicated time for innovation is enormous. I try to carve out at least a half an hour a day for innovation time, which may or may not be watching videos of cats.
Nice.
Dana, unfortunately, I missed the closing keynote, but you took some good notes on that one. Do you have anything that you wanted to share that might be relevant to our audience here?
Yeah, I think the closing keynote with Kimberly Ellison Taylor, she was fabulous, has a great amount of positive energy. I thought it was a good way to wrap everything up. It was a focus around technology and innovation with technology. I definitely took away from this session and even just a lot of the other sessions that I attended that this current situation with the pandemic and with working remotely, it actually might make people more receptive and more willing to adopt new technologies and to take that risk because they've had to change things around already. That really is a positive thing that I could see coming out of this whole situation. She also used the comparisons with, you know, you don't want to be the taxi company when Uber comes along. In the current moment, we really need to be thinking ahead at where we see things going and trying to get there before we're left stuck behind. She kept saying the future is now and the pace of change will never be as slow as it is today. Not sure what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I personally agree with that. I think, you know, for as horrific and tragic and seismic as this whole COVID situation has been, it's definitely a forcing function for lots of companies. You either are able to work from home or you're not. There's not a whole lot of wiggle room there. And as we stare down the barrel of our home offices staying our only offices for the next few months, perhaps, we need to acclimate as an industry to technology very quickly. And it sounds like that's the same sort of thing that she was getting at with the taxi cab versus Uber analogy there.
Yep.
Yeah. And I agree. I heard some of the same themes in the other sessions that I attended. A lot of companies weren't ready for all of their employees to be working from home when it comes to digital transformation and IT risk and controls. Being ready, looking ahead, adapting, I think, is definitely part of the major themes that I heard.
Absolutely. And speaking of adapting, we have to adapt this conversation for a quick commercial. So hang tight, be back in a jiffy. Here's a commercial. Today's episode is brought to you by Workiva. Fun fact, my first job was operating the scoreboard at local high school hockey games. They paid me in cash under the table, which is not something to admit in front of finance people, but I trust you, dear listener. I was under constant pressure from players, from coaches, from referees, even the fans to keep the right time on the board and get the players out of the penalty box at the right time. The job was about pinpoint timing and precision, all while people threw popcorn at my head. Workiva would have not helped me at all in that situation, but it will help you manage similarly stressful pressures you're under from executives, from the audit committees, from your board, and other scary characters. With Workiva, you get access to critical data right when it's needed, win back more time to spend on important stuff, and stay out of the penalty box. Yes, Workiva. Learn more at workiva.com. That's WORKIVA.com. And welcome back. Hey, Dana, Brooke, I'm so excited. The next part of the conversation, it's going to be show and tell. Not quite kindergarten, perhaps a little more advanced. I don't think kindergartners would understand this stuff. But I thought it might be good to go around and talk about some of the breakout sessions that we attended. Dana, would you mind kicking us off here?
Sure. So I attended several sessions that went into detail about embracing new technologies or innovating within your current process to be more automated. One of the sessions that I'll cover in a little bit more detail was a case study focused on control test automation. So after attending this session, to me, it felt like a no-brainer for companies to start exploring this. So when you think about controls testing, very expensive resources are being used by most companies. So it takes a lot of time, and we only end up testing a very small subset of the population because we just request samples and then test that point in time. So when you think about it, like, why should someone be spending all of this time documenting controls and pulling a few samples when they can be doing analytical work or, you know, contributing directly to the business? It doesn't really...
Yeah, just because the process of pulling controls and testing it is just laborious and funky and weird.
Yes, it's very repetitive and it just takes a lot of time to go through that process. Now, the automated approach, it really does away with a lot of that normal cycle. What happens also with the current approach is you might go through the testing of those samples and find an issue. You don't end up doing that root cause analysis until months later. So by the time you go through and end up fixing it, it's months down the road, where if you're doing this continuous monitoring or the automated controls testing, you can find things right away and have the chance to spend your time on actually remediating it, making the process better, as opposed to that manual testing process.
Yeah. Sounds like put in the legwork now to improve your processes for the future.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sounds like a great opportunity to look at transactions and to be able to see if any of them exceed a certain threshold and to be notified. That would be a great financial indicator and
yes,
a good use of continuous monitoring.
Absolutely. And that traditional control testing is just a gut check. It's really... Only testing that subset of the population. And when this is more automated, you really can just pump that constant data, all the full population, through the system and feel a lot more confident in your testing as well. So it's not just an efficiency thing we're talking about here. It's really, really improves quality as well.
Dang, that sounds like a win-win.
Yeah, very cool. Now, the other thing I'll mention, because there were a lot of questions just around, well, what technology is being used to support these processes? So we are not talking about using extremely complex tools that only certain people would know how to use. There are tools out there that people might have access to today. There's just a lot of tools that are at people's fingertips that can really support this type of work that people may not realize.
Yeah, I heard the same thing. In the new world of remote auditing, audit tools need to be easy enough to use by anyone. A lot of companies are adapting and looking at new tools and new ways to audit and new ways to do things outside of what they've been doing before, especially remote.
Absolutely.
Be able to collaborate better with their peers and take the agile approach.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. So one final thing I'll just mention that people might be thinking about as it relates to some of these newer technologies or newer ways to provide more efficiency to your process. There still are some unknowns as it relates to external audit and the reliance approach with regards to continuous monitoring and the automated testing. What percent of exceptions constitute a failure? And when you move away from some of that traditional pass-fail, what's an acceptable failure rate? There still are some unknowns, but I think that's all part of the process that I anticipate some more guidance around how companies can approach these and some best practices. But we are still more early on, I'd say, for teams that have adopted this automation.
Word. And unknowns are job security. You know, it gives us the ability to go out there and carve our own paths.
Yep.
Alrighty, Brooke, I think you're up.
Sure. I attended a few sessions. And again, a few of the common themes, the ones that I attended, were around agile auditing. And then also changes to the audit committee around what are the top emerging risks? How are emerging risks changing as a result of what we've seen over this past year? And when it comes to really agile auditing, where auditors used to be able to actually go in and sit down and actually have a conversation with a stakeholder, it's become more and more important that they keep those open lines of communication open and that they have those conversations and use all the popular video tools that have become available. A lot of companies have seen IT risk as a top level of concern. So more audits around IT risk, around cybersecurity. There have been a lot of cybersecurity breaches as a result of COVID and just companies being more at risk.
I have a question for both of you. You've both brought up agile independently, which indicates that it's a really important topic. In your opinion, is this more of a mindset shift or is this an actual physical thing that you implement into your processes?
I think it's both.
I was going to say the same thing, Brooke.
Some of it's within how you structure your auditing organization, and then some of it's going to change actually what you physically do within the software or how you work.
For sure. And all that helps you stay ahead of everything that the world has given us since February, just the complexities upon complexities that the world dishes out.
Right. Yeah, I think too, like when you think about traditional internal audit teams and even internal controls or other risk and compliance teams at an organization, they go through this annual planning process and then try to stick with that plan throughout the full year. But that approach won't work as well if, like, you can't just be stuck to a plan that you set at one period in time and think that that's going to work for the whole year. Many things will, but there has to be both the mindset of the team and then also the structure and processes in place that you can change things on the fly and that there won't be a huge disruption to your work.
One of the sessions I listened to was with in the banking industry, and you know, they talked about the reduction in business activities and all of the financial relief that banks and credit card organizations are trying to provide to its consumers. That's requiring them, Dana, to your point, to switch to continuous monitoring because what they were normally looking at is, okay, here's a credit limit, here's the minimum payment. Well, that's all blown out the window. So they're having to continuously monitor and adapt on the fly based on, you know, the willingness or lack of willingness or ability to pay. And then also reputational risk has been one too for a lot of companies, where we've seen, you know, brands, we've seen companies go bankrupt, we've seen large organizations close. So, these are things that auditors have to think about. Companies that are staying open and staying afloat, how are they handling their reputational risk?
Yeah, there's an immense amount to take away there. You mentioned IT risk a minute ago, and I think that dovetails well into one of the sessions that I attended that I thought was most important on my end. It was called Batcave to Boardroom, Transitioning Geek Speak to Business Communication. I heard geek speak and that stood out to me. So do you remember the original Batman TV series, like from the 60s? I mean, I wasn't alive. Yes. Not saying that either of you were.
So neither was I. Yeah.
So, you know, Batman's utility was only useful in as much as he was called upon and he came there. They turned the bat signal on and he showed up. There's similarities to the IT compliance world and where executives are today. The executives turn on their bat signal and the IT audit folks come out of the bat cave. And that is the only time they're heard from. One pressing quote that I took a screen cap of, Peter Cochran, a futurist entrepreneur and business and engineering advisor, said, the IT department is like a leper colony. Go into any company and there's real hatred between the CEO and CFO and their IT department. And the problem there is that there's lack of communication skills. IT folks typically can't relate what they want into an actual business need and then relay it up to executives in a way that makes sense to them. It's about selling your positioning. And I think that's universally useful to audit folks, to risk folks, to compliance folks, anyone who gets up in front of a camera, a microphone, a group of people, and tries to persuade someone. You have to put yourself in the shoes of whoever your audience is and be able to relate to what their needs and what their pain points are, even before you take the stage.
I think that's a really good point. And I think a lot of those conversations have had to take place based on where we are and the increased needs for IT resources and additional software based on, again, as I said before, companies that don't have software and don't have the resources for their employees to work from home.
And like all the stuff that we talked about at the beginning part of the conversation around agility and automation and cybersecurity, these are all technology. IT has the seat at the table. They are our friends. We need their buy-in as internal audit folks to sell our ideas up to the top brass, the top echelon of the company.
Yep.
For sure. Guys, this was great. I feel like I took so much away. Thanks for taking such good notes. While we're thinking about conferences, while we have our best bunny slippers on for our virtual conferences, I've been thinking about snacks because conferences wouldn't be conferences without snacks. So that brings us to the closing question of the day. What is the best conference snack that you've had? Or what is your conference snack of choice? Dana.
So I really like when they have like a tapas assortment. So think hummus and pita or veggies and dip. I really like that type of variety.
Yeah, I'm all about it. Hummus bar.
Yes, exactly.
One of the conferences I went to, they had an ice cream sundae afternoon snack bar. So they were serving vanilla ice cream and then they had M&Ms and granola and Oreos. So you could pick your toppings. So that was amazing.
That's so good.
I actually think, was it IAA All-Stars, Drew? I thought they had a ice cream sundae bar last year.
They did, and I took a really dope nap after it.
Yeah, that's always like a good idea, but then if you have sessions afterwards.
It's all about, you know, how much am I willing to risk this inevitable sugar crash?
Right.
After gorging myself on M&Ms. Either way, This has not been a sugary conversation. This has been whole grain, nutritious, and all that lovely stuff. So, Brooke, Dana, thank you so much for joining us on Off the Books. I'm Drew Dubner. Again, this has been Off the Books. Please subscribe, leave a review, or tell your buddies if you like the show. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave. We'll be right back.